So this is kind of the show and tell thing. Simon Munnery, you are special guest today.
Oh, thank you.
The kind of the Ernest Borgnine of the event.
Ernest Borgnine from the film Marty.
Yeah. Oh, you love. Yeah, we've
I love the film Marty.
Borgnine, aren't we?
Yeah.
Has anyone else ever had that discussion with about Heart to Heart, where I think everyone has once had this argument with someone, but I may well be proved wrong. You're not necessarily in the correct demographic, Josie, but let's just find out, because you are considerably younger than the rest of us. Where someone goes, "Oh yeah, Ernest Borgnine, he was in Heart to Heart as the butler, wasn't he?" And you go, "No, it wasn't Ernest Borgnine. It was another craggy-faced man. It was Lionel Stander." Has anyone else had that playground argument?
No.
Oh, anyway, Simon Munnery, because you are our very special guest.
Thank you. Sounds like a threat.
Also like Anton Rogers, who was often a guest in late 1960s and early 1970s ITC things. He would often, not really a special guest, actually, he was like a guest. He would often play an angry Russian caught killing a prostitute before the man in a suitcase would come out of the suitcase and solve it. So because it's you have a choice of what kind of theme you would like from Martin White.
Something jazzy.
Have we had jazzy before? Man. We haven't really had jazz. You can't do jazz on the accordion. No,
reggae?
Can you
do reggae?
oh, no. Reggae's like kind of slow ska, isn't it?
That's right.
That's how it's defined.
That's how it is in the dictionary. But with feeling.
Okay.
It's difficult. Nice.
Everything sort of sounds the same on the accordion. I had this.
I don't think you're happy with that tune, are you, Simon?
It wasn't very much of
it. There's a theme for Simon Munnery.
It hinted at something.
There we go. That's the theme for Simon Munnery. And obviously, before you say anything throughout the next 45 minutes, Simon, if you could put your hand up so that you can have the introduction of 45 seconds of that, so we always know, in a kind of a bod-like fashion, here comes Simon Munnery.
Right.
And then we'll have that tune. You don't necessarily have to. It might get in the way of some of the things you want to say.
Normal conversation with a musical interlude between each phrase.
Yeah. I think Simon's got something to say.
Yes.
What was it, Simon? What were you going to say?
It's gone out of my mind now.
Oh, I knew this would happen. What a disastrous technique. And Josie Long, are you all right, Josie Long?
Yeah, at the expense of sounding a bit mentally ill, my hand smells really nice.
Does it?
I've got a new shower gel and it's really... It sort of lingers on you.
I can't quite get over towards your hand. Simon, can you just smell the hand?
Smell that. Smells of honey.
Yes, it does
nice,
smell nice,
it?
Yes.
Maybe not. Do you want to go? That's things to say.
At the moment, your fiance's at home currently putting some body lotion all over the bread while the honey jar is lying tilted over, making the
That's
whole...
me doing a gulp, like, oh no, that
oh,
must
no,
be what's occurring.
I swapped the lotion with the honey.
Why?
Matt's gonna be furious. Why don't you do something to help me? So, Josie Long, now, I was going to start asking you, I did a gig at the Langtree Village Hall, I would say last week, but by the time this is heard, it may be very long time ago, but I just wanted to start on this, I was down doing a couple of gigs in Devon. First night, lovely, really nice audience. Next night, went to Langtree Village Hall. Not that they were cruel, I make that clear. It was a disappointing Village Hall, one, because the last Village Hall I played in Devon had a 1953-year-old picture of the Queen up on the... there was an essence of Clive Dunn about it. It was great. This was a modern Village Hall, and I got in, and the bloke who ran the hall immediately went... he went, "Oh, no, they're a little bit worried you're going to be a little bit clever for them, so I hope not. They love fart jokes." And, of course, immediately I was thinking, I don't have any... I've got to kind of... Or just end everything with a rude parp, you know. Mm. So I go, that's what annoys me about tabloid newspapers and stuff. You know, but I didn't risk that. And then he also went, another thing, a lot of the audience, just so you know, they've never even been out of Devon.
Wow.
Right, it was a difficult gig, it turns out. They liked the bits when I kind of made fun of their job. "You're a farmer? Yeah, you must like cows and lambs." And I went, "Yeah, he probably does." Right, so that was all right, that first half hour. But then when I got into the other stuff, it wasn't... The creationist routine, frankly, didn't go down very well at all. which was a pity. So, Simon, have you had any of those kind of gigs where you turn up somewhere and you just think, I've got to do 2 hours and I don't know what I'm going to say now?
Yes. Well, I've had a gig in, I remember going to Norwich, or was it King's Lynn, somewhere in the Norfolk region, and just casually asked the man in charge whether he expected any audience to come tonight. And he said, no, not really. Round here, we've got gardens. And I thought, fair enough. And, you know, why would you want to go out and sit in a dark room listening to someone talk when you can plant flowers?
Oh, and that must be, is that why time. You made the jacket that you used to have with all flowers on it? You used to have a jacket with flowers.
Well, if so you
that-
can't beat them... Yeah, they, yes, because it's some gardening
ransack
appeal.
Their gardens
we got gardens,
flowers.
We don't want to go. The bloke Simon Munnery is a garden. He is a human garden. It's amazing.
He invites you on stage to till him.
I do remember actually that we both did Glastonbury on a terrible night. Kevin McAleer was on, the excellent Kevin McAleer, but he didn't have a very nice time, and don't think he did. Then you went on, and this woman kept coming up and trying to smell and touch your jacket. This was about 1997, I think.
Oh, I remember that year.
And it was a really weird one. And then I went up, and it was going all right, not brilliantly, but I was kind of getting through it by shouting, and it was a bit boorish. And then halfway through, I made this terrible mistake, which is I made this joke which involved the word gypsy. But not in a bad way. It was a way that made me look like an idiot.
Right.
I'm all right for sugar, thanks, Josie.
Now you've made me look like an idiot. We just brought in some teas. I'm not like askew.
No, don't. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, I went on, said that, and it was, I can't remember what the joke was, but it was a joke that made me look like an idiot. But it didn't matter. One bloke at the back just started shouting out, "There's nothing wrong with gypsies!" And then about one third of the audience started joining in, and one third didn't really care. It was Saturday evening, they'd been doing a lot, and the other third were highly amused by this, and people were running on stage and going, "Get off!" And I was going, "I want to get off, but contractually I can't. It's an absolute disaster, this system." And they were getting more and more angry, and in some ways, it was the greatest gig I ever did, but in many other ways, possibly the worst as well.
It's something very exciting about dying on your ass. Dying's one thing, but being actively hated by a large group of people, you can't beat that.
It is, you do feel a
experience.
Bit like, oh, they could hurt me a lot. You feel kind of defiant as well, sort of like, well, I've got this and you hate it. What are we to do now? Like, you've reached a stalemate in a clever way.
Yeah.
So the glamour of violence, though, is in one way good, but then you get that kind of just that steely grey apathy, which is the worst. I mean, that's proper dying, isn't it? I think there's one way of... If people are booing and shouting and you're standing there going, "I'm so sorry, but I'm going to have to be here for ages," you kind of feel you've still got something out of it, but just hearing a general mumbling...
In my double act many years ago, God Jesus, we our one and only corporate gig we did. Right, we booked a party, God Jesus. It's a deadpan double act. Right, we didn't realise, of course, you'd need someone to warm the audience up or even announce the fact that comedy had begun. It was a Christmas party, remember, we were on, and we just totally ignored, they were just chatting. Apart from there was one heckle, this bloke stood up and went, "We vote Conservative." that was fun. Dying, I've got plenty of anecdotes. My bucket head, I used to wear a bucket. I did it in Edinburgh and it went fine for a month. And I thought, oh, well, I'll do that as an act, like 20 minutes, this should be all right. And I did the Glee Club in Birmingham. And Thursday night was all right. It didn't go, but it went all right, you know. Friday night, for some reason, I didn't even get to the microphone before the heckling had started. Andre Vincent was compared, he's now, please welcome Simon. I started walking on wearing my bucket. Just a barrage of heckles. And the thing I hadn't realised is if you're wearing a bucket, you can't tell where the heckles are coming from or hear them very well, let alone think of a witty reply. What with the heat? So I finally did get, you know, got the microphone and tell us a joke. The only laugh I got that evening was someone shouted, "Are you from Faking It?" I didn't even know what that was at the time. That's my level of otherworldliness. And the right, so they're going, take the bucket off, take the bucket off. Which I realise that's at some point I'm going to have to take the bucket off anyway. You know, it's only got about 10, 15 minutes of bucket material. So it didn't feel like it. 10, 15 minutes plus laugh. But if I took the bucket off, that's not going to solve it, the situation. It's not going to suddenly win them round.
We take it all back.
It was such an awful gig, right? So I stood there and people go, tell us a joke. As they do, you know, tell us a joke. But like, you'd never go to a surgeon and go, make me well, in a threatening way. And you can't make someone laugh. If they want to laugh, they'll laugh. You can let them laugh. It's not like that. Finally, gig's over, got off, a bit shaken up, just barrage from all over, and I'm trying to sneak back to the dressing room to get my bag and leave, and this bloke stopped me and said right to my face, "You're shit," right in my face, and I just stood there, and he said, "Aren't you going to react then?" Even more annoying than it, and then I couldn't leave the venue.
I've had loads of bad gigs.
It wasn't meant to be bad necessarily. It's just meant to be, you know, those weird ones where, because the audience at Langtree, they were really nice. You know, there's that kindliness where they go, well, I mean, he has bothered to come down. I don't get any of it, and I think it's probably rubbish. And he's certainly no Jethro, but you know, at least he came down. You know, and then thanks. And then you've got to leave and you go, I'm sorry. And you just feel all the time, you go, I'm sorry for disappointing you. No, it's just you're not really our cup of tea.
I like that a lot.
Chris Lynham, who's, I'm sure, if you work with Chris, Josie?
Oh, the Rocket Man.
Well, that's part of the Rocket Man.
I've never worked with him.
On a bad night.
I wish I could pay that. I'm not allowed to.
No, you're not, legally. No. You've worked with Chris, haven't you?
I was with him years ago when he was height of his fame, when he was playing Ipswich Corn Exchange. And I was, I'd seen him quite a lot. It was the most funniest thing I've ever seen in my life when he had the first time I saw the firework up the bum routine.
Yeah, for those of you who don't, I'll just explain that he does a lot of bizarre things, including just there's bits which are like film dialogue that he does, these long speeches, and then he kind of used to eat an enormous amount of... I love chocolate. He used to do this routine, he was just eating a huge amount of chocolate spraying everywhere, and then he would end by dropping his trousers and placing a Roman candle between his cheeks that would then be set fire to, and there was a man on stage basically with a Roman candle going off.
And the music of There's No Business Like Show Business. Anyway, so I was down in the dressing room having a beer, and then the fire alarms go off. I think, oh, they've forgotten to turn the smoke detectors off, you know. So I wander up casually to the side of the stage, and there I see this sight, which is what happened was the firework in Ipswich Corn Exchange, they can change the shape of the venue for wrestling. So the stage can go up and down, there's chairs underneath it. The firework had fallen out of the crack of his arse, down a crack in the stage, set fire to the chairs below. So Chris Lynham was there with one hand over his genitals, the other hand holding a fire extinguisher, trying to spray down this crack. Like, the audience are crying with laughter, they can't move. Right? The whole, you know, there's a bit of smoke coming up. And then the fire brigade arrived, and the fire brigade are dragging people out, still laughing. They couldn't stop laughing. The funniest thing I've ever seen. And so a big crowd assembled outside. We're all outside, you know, it's 11:30, what are we going to do? And then Chris Lynham came around the corner, the crowd went, "Way!" raised him onto their shoulders, and someone kicked open the pub and reopened it, and everyone carried on drinking. It was an amazing night. The firework up the arse was originally Greatest Show on Legs finale.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Malcolm was the first one to do it.
Malcolm Hardy,
RIP. But his arse cheeks were too flabby. he couldn't grip it. So Chris ended up doing it. And I'm a leg. I was in the Greatest Show on Legs the one time at Glastonbury again. But it was great show on no legs because the stage was wet, and as we came on, I had shiny soles and just slipped over and took the other two out. The famous balloon dance is the
yes.
being naked
that,
on stage.
Yeah.
Have you done it?
Yeah, I did it in Johannesburg for 2 weeks. What a receptive audience!
Really?
Yeah.
The thing Malcolm had trained us up with the dance moves, but the thing I hadn't worked out was I was very drunk. Obviously, I wouldn't have done it. But he was telling me, you need a balloon in your mouth because one of the balloons escapes. You've got to find another one and there's nowhere to store it. But I hadn't practiced blowing up a balloon with a balloon in my mouth, which, of course, you don't have to do. You can blow up the balloon, then put the balloon in your mouth. But I've got to have a balloon in my mouth. Couldn't blow it up. And the curtain was opening. I'm looking across at Vic, the other, who was Malcolm's plumber, the other leg that year. And he's got his balloons up. But anyway, the curtain's opened and I had no... inflated. The suspense element of the act was gone. So I just had some uninflated balloons. Happy days.
Yeah, I only did it because I was up there. I was in Johannesburg with Malcolm. The reason we started, he wanted us to do loads of routines from Great Show on Legs because no one could understand him when he was doing his stand up. Because, you know, obviously you're in a different country, they have a different, you know, the ears pick up different. So a bloke goes, all right, and I was going, I've got no idea what he's saying. So he's going, and we said, look, we will do the balloon dance routine. But the other bloke, Martin Bigpick, kept saying to me, look, if you don't want to do it, just say no. And I thought, I know what you're doing is he just thinks I'll definitely say no. And then he'll go, I'm so sorry, Malcolm. I mean, I would have loved to have done it, but nevertheless every night I go, no, I shall do it again. And you can see him going, oh, curses. But we were absolutely, because I'd go on, I was on last in this weird thing, and, you know, doing what I kind of some vague form of what I deemed to be satire or whatever, and then immediately afterwards standing behind this little curtain taking all my clothes off and going, a moment ago I was going, well, I'll tell you something else about South Africa in 1983 which I thought was quite interesting about Eugene Terre Blanche. Now I'm just wearing socks. In a minute I'll yet again be standing on stage going, oh, hang on a minute, both balloons aren't meant to be up in the air. Oh dear. And it was just rubbish. Now, Josie, what have you bought? We haven't done any of the show and tell elements yet. I would like to know what you have bought to show or tell.
You know how, like, in the back of... we've got the New Yorker in my house a lot because my housemates are very sort of... ideals, yeah, as to what they aspire to be.
And, these cartoons.
You know, they have a caption competition at the end. And it's always people, like, making the best quip that they possibly can.
Oh,
and,
sorry, just before you go, do you want to just say, just a bit of warning, I would recommend people don't buy the New Yorker serviettes, cartoon serviettes, which are available for Christmas time, because you buy them and you presume when you look there's a joke on one side and there's a joke on the other in the pack, and you presume they're all different jokes. They're not. All the serviettes just have the two cartoons on them.
Oh, Christ.
And that's, you know, you've got 20 people around the table. It's anyway, sorry, Josie.
It would stifle a conversation, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Which one of you guys? I've got the same one. I've got the bloke talking to the dinosaur.
Do you know what I like to do at Christmas? If you cut the Christmas jokes, the punchline and the setup apart, and then you reattach them with the wrong punchline and setup, it's the best game in the world.
What's the best one you've had so far, Josie Long? Martin, quick.
Why did the Why did the snowman start crying? It was his birthday. Just beautiful. Yeah. But no, the idea that I had was, I'd really like to start entering caption competitions all the time with the worst captions I could think of. Like, you know, there'd be like a man and a tiger in an office. And the man saying, a tiger has come into the office.
or just cancel tea, Margot. What?
Yeah, just, and it just, you know, the man has hit the man. There were like two men in an office just trying your hardest to sort of describe things literally. And I was going to try and bring a photo that we could all do the worst captions in the world for. But I remembered how last time, how good it was, and Sarah Kendall brought something in that we could play and that everyone could hear, so I thought the worst thing would be me bringing a picture and us all going, oh look, it's got legs, you know. But yeah, we can do that if you want. I have still got a photo.
Okay, that'd be great.
And the other things I brought in are a dinosaur puppet. I went on my anniversary with my boyfriend, and I took him to this exhibition in the Natural History Museum, which we found out as soon as we got in there was for children, and it was completely empty. And afterwards I bought us these puppets, hand puppets, and they're plastic, but
isn't that the one, the Natural History Museum, with the all the robot?
Yeah,
that's not for kids.
It's fucking
brilliant.
You get a barcode, so you can scan it in and find clues to search for a mystery dinosaur.
Why is that for kids? Why is that for kids?
Because it says "Hello, children" at the beginning.
I like the British Museum. I go in there sometimes. The British Museum of stuff we've nicked.
But that is, I mean, that genuinely though, that's what they admitted to, wasn't it? When the museum started off to just show off and go look at all the stuff we'd done nicked. That was. Yeah, we've been all around the world nicking stuff. It's brilliant. Do you know how much? Do you know how much this lot cost? This old bloody exhibition. A couple of beads, mate. That's it. Got shrunken heads and everything. It's brilliant. They're bloody idiots out there. You can get loads of great stuff.
Forget if there was a museum next to it, which was all full of knockoff versions of the same things, which were, and it was a bit cheaper to get in.
Or just the museums. They broke into each other continuously, stealing back and forth. you're not just doing the word search, are you, Josie? You're actually looking for
I'm looking for a good picture.
Have you, Simon, while Josie's trying to find her thing, have you brought something to show and tell?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Excellent.
I bought a book. I thought that might be acceptable.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's a People at Work book. Ladybird series. And I found this in Adelaide. I was just walking into a shop. I was actually looking for something by Noam Chomsky, but they didn't have any Chomsky. And I thought, oh, it brought back some memory. I must have seen it as a child. And it's from the Lady Bird People at Work series. And you check on the back, it's got the list. And there were 13 occupations in the late 70s. It was before IT. they are the fireman, the policeman, the nurse for the lady, the fisherman, the farmer, the builder, the postman, the miner, the soldier, the sailor, the airman in the Royal Air Force specifically. Other sorts of airmen didn't count. And the road makers and the car makers, who one presumes are friends. Mutual interest. How many cars?
Build us a road, we ain't sold no cars for ages.
Like road makers and car makers, even though it's cars, it still sounds kind of like Sermon on the Mount.
Yes, the cheese makers, peacemakers. The blessed shall be the car makers, for they shall build cars. Yes, you know, we built 1 million cars this week, and how many miles of road did you build?
Just done a couple. Thousands. We've got 1 million cars, mate. What are we going to do?
Yes, sort of race between them. Obviously, the car makers have won out in the end, but in the 70s, there was still hope. Anyway, the soldier, you open it up, and first page is a picture of some of the things you could win, some of the medals, and then...
What's the best one? Is there a best medal?
Best medal? Well, the Royal Red Cross. They're not ranked in order.
Oh, can I just have a quick look? Just to see if there's a medal that I'd have liked most. There's not that many. There's only 8 medals. I thought there'd be more. A little bit disappointed.
When soldiers have free time, they need not wear their uniforms. But they can if they want. Every few months, soldiers get holidays. These are called leave. If the soldiers do not live near the barracks, they are given tickets for free travel home on the railway. And most of the overseas countries to which soldiers go are warmer than ours and have oil.
Does it say that?
No, it doesn't say have oil.
In fact, beware of Simon's sneaky satire.
Nowhere. You're satirising 30-year-old children's books. But nowhere in this book does it mention that you could get killed.
Just because you were reading from that was another thing that happened at Langtry Village Hall. I think I mentioned this in the first one of these we did, where, you know that book Josie I got called The Secrets of Picking Up Sexy Girls?
Yeah.
And sometimes near the beginning of the gig, I read a little bit out, and it's this bit about blouses and how to take them off and stuff. And this is how I judge that the audience and me might not get on necessarily, because I find this quite an amusing sentence, going, when taking off blouses, remember there are separate rules. With a willing girl, first untuck the blouse and then unbutton it. With a recently calmed girl, right, I find the idea of notions of willing girls and recently calmed, even the 70s, weird. Nothing. Just them looking, going, that's probably right, yeah, because willing girls are very different than recently calmed girls. Recently calmed, they've got a funny attitude, haven't they? They're antsy. They're antsy. So at that point I thought, right, I'm screwed. That and the fact they didn't find the title of the book, What God Does When Women Pray. Like, again, yeah, it probably would be different, right? Because women, I suppose, they're weaker in that. Maybe they wouldn't want to pray for a plough or hat. Nah, maybe a hat, I don't know.
I like recently calmed. A girl has been recently calmed.
Yeah. It never goes with the uncalmed. I've got to say, no. It's at least, you know, politically correct enough to go, don't go with, you know, when beating a woman to a point of calm, we'll just let them work out how to recently calm them. You know, it's up to them.
But if they've been calmed, not recently calmed, if they've been calmed, say, a few hours ago, they've been calm for a long time, do they go off?
No, sorry, they then fall into the willing section.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so
right.
In the Venn diagram of willing and recently calmed, the shaded area is calmed over a lengthy period to the point of willing, I suppose.
I did actually bring a Venn diagram in.
I was expecting nothing less.
I brought my Venn diagram.
Josie, you found something. You were going to show us something.
Oh, I found a picture that we can make a caption for. My caption for it is a man, a woman and a boy.
Right, okay. Just so you know, the picture is a man, a woman and a boy. Mm. So in many ways what you've done there is going...
Who's saying that though?
Just at the bottom.
That's a good one. That's funny. Who's saying that? Brilliant.
Do you know what it reminds me of? When I was six, I was sort of... in reception, we made a newspaper and... the teacher said to me, oh, you can be the editor, Josie. And I thought it meant that I'd have some kind of artistic control over what I was allowed to put in. But all it meant was I had to stick all the people's work in the thing. So this made me very angry because I had to include what I considered to be a very poor article written by Christopher Miller, which was a picture of a woman and a horse. And they were both like laughing. And all he'd written was, the woman and the horse are laughing. And I remember like trying to put it to one side and thinking, this isn't front page news, you know, this shouldn't be, it shouldn't make the papers.
The woman and the whores are laughing.
Well, but the thing is, Monica Gunaropoulos wrote quite a charming account of being at the dentist's. That can go on page one.
But it hasn't got the immediate visual appeal of the laughing woman and whores.
It's not news, though.
Mm. Yeah, but sometimes you don't go with the news, do you? You go with...
Human interest.
Well, you first saw someone go, oh, well, I don't know what this is. There's a woman and a horse laughing. They've picked it up, they've got it in their hand.
Oh, the woman and the horse are laughing, I see. Yeah. That's what's happening.
It means that the audience are happy. It's like when an audience hear a joke and they know the punchline. They're waiting for it and they're happy. So he goes, oh, there's a woman and a horse laughing. Wonder what this story is. Woman and a horse laughing. I got that right. I'm going to buy this all the time now because undoubtedly it always confirms my beliefs about the world.
That's what Mrs. McVickers said, but I was too young to understand.
Oh, was that when you were living
at home? Don't even say that.
Oh, okay. No, I just wondered because was this when you, where were you living then?
I lived in a semi.
Oh, yeah, your dad's semi, of course.
A semi. I lived in a semi. Detached.
Yeah.
So hang on, both of you
not,
then.
Well, not the same
did,
one.
Did your dad have a semi then?
My dad had a semi.
Alright.
You're a child.
That would be front page.
I've got
Joe Geelong's dad shows off his new semi.
Don't.
It's been years since I've had a semi.
Like they've been making
it's
fun of me.
It's a very childish joke. It's
my
not
dad's
even a
very
joke.
Religious. He's not going to find that amusing.
Well, he's not going to understand if he's very religious,
he
is
will
he?
Understand
they don't,
it.
Very religious people don't understand rude things.
He knows the world.
What two animals make this noise?
A horse.
That's one.
A human being.
Laughing.
Oh, cat. A monkey. A chimpanzee will make that noise.
Will it?
Yeah. Like, you know, when you say, like, you're interviewing a chimpanzee. You know, people are like interviewing a chimpanzee and they go, come on, Rusty, what do you think of these biscuits? And he'll go like, and then he'll go, like that.
Anyway, so your Venn diagram, Simon.
Oh, my Venn diagram.
Yeah, we don't want to
lose that. Here's my Venn diagram. As you see, it says diagrams, overlapping circles, Venn diagram. So it's unique among Venn diagrams in that it describes what a Venn diagram is.
That's brilliant.
But of course, if you don't understand what a Venn diagram is, this Venn diagram won't help you at all. But there it is.
We should make that clear. That will be on the website
yes,
as well.
Good.
Of the Venn diagram. So, Martin, give yourself your own theme tune. Why not?
Before
we get to your show and tell. What have you got?
I've got an old school report from when I was 15.
Right. I bet you were quite a good boy at school.
Yeah,
weren't you?
It's not really that much. Well, there was guess what I was really bad at.
Ooh, physical education.
Yes. And there is a bit
accordion.
In here.
That shows you for saving the best theme tune for yourself. Murder has made you look that big. And at home, you can just work out how big that big is.
My hand smells so nice.
Oh, stop smelling your hand.
Sorry.
Here we go. We had to do a fitness assessment. I'd forgotten all about this until I did it, and I was hopeless at it. You just had to sit in a room doing lots of, you know, repetitive, exercises. What's a squat thrust?
Oh, I know that.
Oh, it's where you're down on all fours, squatting, like almost like in a kind of rabbit thing, and your legs go back and forth. So you're stationary, but the legs back and forth.
Well, I got a D for squat thrust. And the descriptions of the grades are as follows: A, excellent; B, good; maintains a standard allowing full participation in sport; C, poor; inadequate level of fitness; D, and this is what I got, unfit; should be concerned about poor physical condition.
Open brackets, disabled. Close brackets. Through his own choosing.
So, yes, lots of C's and D's there. But the best one is on the next page. Physical education assessment. Basketball, C. Good attempt. Badminton, C. Needs to work at basic skills. What, like hitting the shuttlecock and getting it over the net. That's what I still needed to work out.
I think that's one of the main reasons that probably everyone around this table has chosen a life, mixing self-loathing and paranoia and people judging them every single night. You know, oh, I know what I should do. I'm really uncertain about myself. I should probably walk out here in front of these lights and just be judged by these people who probably have nothing in common. Oh, they hated me. That's helped the loathing element of my life.
There's an excruciating bit at the end where the 15-year-old me has had to write a sort of self-report.
You
really
are dangerous because I am a keen pianist. I go to Ashurst Youth Club. I like doing magic tricks. Oh, the worst.
And I was thinking, why can't I get a girlfriend?
Magic tricks. Oh, my God. You should have done them at parties. Magic tricks at parties. If you can do card tricks at parties, girls will all be like, wow, you're really cool. And then they'll
the piano,
all do
the
you.
Piano is good. I used to sit down at piano and play It Must Be Love by Madness. That was always a good thing. And all girls would flock around.
Keep talking. I'm just reading his report generally now.
Perhaps just think of a catch.
Oh, you've got an exclamation mark, which always, that's the teacher definitely giving you a special pat, isn't
pat
it?
Pat on the back.
Well done,
you.
No exclamation mark after science. Very pleased with his...
The science one is that Martin enjoys puzzling out the patterns that exist in science.
When I was 14, I actually got... Josie seems to think that making jovial comments is more important than learning chemistry. I was really proud of that.
I did a, I got into trouble because there's an extent to which you could get away with being funny and the teacher would laugh and you'd sort of get away with not being very clever. And I used to do funny front covers for geography projects. And, you know, there's one where we went to see a river or something and I did it so it looked a bit like it was like a Star Trek film and it was all of us in the bus and stuff. And, you know, got a bit of a laugh. And but I'd also done the work to support it. but I did one where I'd done no work at all, and this was for my GCSE coursework, and we had to do a village study, and we had to pick a sort of a subject, and the subject I picked was Forest Row Health Centre in the right place, and I worked out some kind of way of figuring out where it should be based on where everyone lives, and I concluded that it should have been built, you know, a few yards to the left of where it actually is. And it was a hopeless piece of work, but I thought I'll make up for it by doing a really funny front cover for it. And so I gave supplied with the with the report, I said this is in 2D, and I made a pair of 2D glasses which are just red on both sides.
I do like the fact that your physical education, fair enough, pretty
Mulwimp.
But then look at this: tick, well turned out in correct kit; tick, punctual; tick, polite and well behaved; tick, cooperative, attentive, and reliable. And that is, I think, what we look for in our British sprinters, don't we? Chariots of Fire was as much about manners
decency
as it was about running. He came last; he was 42nd behind the other one. But he said, "Do you remember?" He shook hands with everyone, and he was very nice. And we gave him
very
a badge.
Very polite.
We had our PE teacher was called Roger Hosen, and he's died quite recently, and he got his voice box kicked in. He was an English international rugby player. So really tall like that. Right. And once my mate Ed was halfway up a rope, and he never got that far before because I couldn't climb ropes either. And he got halfway up the rope and he thought, I'm really going to make it this time. And then Roger Hosen looked up and he looked up his shorts. He went, "Oi, lad, don't wear your pants next time." And Ed just had to kind of slide down again. Going, oh. He didn't mean it. It wasn't like in a rude way. He literally meant, "You're wearing your pants under your shorts. It's dirty." That's what he meant. But that really put Ed off the, you know. So if you ever see a monkey, if you've ever been chased by a monkey on a rope, say something about its underwear. If Ed was part of that experiment.
Definitely.
Anyway.
I'm just fun that you didn't have a single half day or absent, which is amazing.
Really?
Yeah. In year 10, I sort of treated it in a kind of like, I'll go for drama, which wasn't very good.
Simon, have you got anything more to show us?
Give a caption.
There are three of us. Sort of thing.
I think you've definitely been trumped there, Josie. I think the winner there is Simon Munro.
The boy is holding a car. Yeah, no, you win.
The final thing is just, that's, I saw Hugh Edwards the other day and he was wearing red trousers, and I've noticed a lot more people are wearing red trousers, a lot more men are wearing red trousers. I don't know why, I don't enjoy watching him read the news a few days later because I've seen him walk in a canteen wearing red kind of jeans. Simon, is that right decision by me or not?
I think it's right. How can you trust a man who wears red trousers? Because we don't really see, you know, the trouser. Even when he's reading the news, you don't know what he's wearing underneath.
Yeah.
But none of them. We don't know.
Would you
Nathan
wear red
Pennington
trousers?
Wears red trousers, doesn't he?
Oh, he was also another boy magician as well.
But he's never read the news. So what's going on there?
He'd probably like to, though. He's got that, you know, when you look in someone's eyes and you see that kind of glint that goes, I could be a newsreader any time I want. Yeah. But with these cups and balls, I'm having so much fun doing my tricks and attracting girls. Did you ever do tricks trying to attract girls, Martin?
Did I? I remember there was I used to work in Four Boys news agency in East Grinstead, and the manager's son, I used to show him lots of magic tricks, and he's a professional magician now. So I did spawn a real magician into
which
this
isn't,
world.
Which means you've spoiled the world. You've helped taint the
I
world.
I have helped.
We're all very disappointed. Josie,
like
what would you like to say? What would you like your ending point to be? Would you like to attack Martin White for creating more
I'd
magicians?
I'd like to say to the boy who tried to steal my phone yesterday, I have bought a new one, but don't try and get it, because A, it's not even worth any money. B, you live opposite me, and C, I fought you off the first time, I'll fight you off again.
Well,
and
I
don't hold grudges. I'm trying my hardest to be a good person in the model of my grandparents, who are very Puritan and sweet people. So you and I can be friends if you'd like. Just don't try.
So your final thought is friends, not theft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Simon?
Yes, yes, I agree with that.
Well, that's it. We did, there were a lot of things we didn't talk about. I wanted to find out if there were already too many trousers in the world generally, and that fashion, because I've been reading a lot of fashion things recently, and I don't know if we need any more fashion or whether it should stop. We'll talk about that another time. Martin.
Your PE teacher's surname is German for trousers.
Hosen. Oh, well, there we go.
That's the German word for trousers. Brilliant. That links everything together, doesn't it?
So we'll do another Venn diagram on trousers and PE teacher and where the shaded area is. Martin, if you just play the music and whichever theme you want, really. Don't play Simon's, because if you play Simon's theme, then he has to say something. It's meant to be the end of the show.
Yes.
It'll be an absolute disaster if that happens. So that was Robin Ince's Show and Tell. That was you heard Simon Munnery, and you can see his Venn diagram that had to do Venn diagrams. Josie Long, she's got a new jumper today that she's made, and Martin White, who was excellently turned out. He was rubbish at running, but he looked lovely. It's a lovely crease as he ran along there, and would always shake hands with the PE teacher afterwards and go, "Sorry that it took me so long to do the running. I feel sick." Show and Tell was produced by Sarah Mahoney and Helen Quigley. For more online entertainment, take a look at Paramount Comedy Shortcuts. Brand new original material made exclusively for Paramount Comedy by current and rising stars of the comedy circuit. Visit paramountcomedy.com/shortcuts to check them out.